You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is Carlin. Right here on 98.7 ESPN, it is Chris Carlin back 7 to 10 as usual. Although only till 9 tonight because we have NBA playoff basketball with the Mavericks and the Clippers a little bit later on. We'll talk about the Nets' awful showing in Game 1, a game in which they tried to fight their way back, but it was really over with by the time halftime rolled around. They cut it to 9 at one point, but that was about it. And we will also get to plenty with the Yankees, with the Mets, the whole sale of the Mets right now, and the fact that Jeff Wilpon is trying to, what's the word we're looking for? Get every last penny out of the sale that he can, and as a result is starting to hint that maybe he doesn't want to sell to Steve Cohen. That's ridiculous. But let's start with some football with the Jets and the Giants. And first of all, with the Giants. So I'm leafing through some of the stories today about what the Giants are up to, about how Joe Judge has got things going in a little bit different way. We're going to run a tougher camp. We're going to make this a lot more difficult on these players, make it a little bit more uncomfortable. We're going to take the jerseys off the names off the jerseys of the team. We're going to have players run laps when they make mistakes because mistakes during games cost you. We're going to have coaches run laps when mistakes are made. Oh my God, can you just settle down? Settle down, Joe Judge. Now, look, we're only a couple of practices in, and I understand that this is a nice rah-rah thing, and fans will get all pumped up for that, and they'll enjoy the fact that they have a head coach who now is demanding accountability. I want you to think about that for a second. When it's come to demanding accountability in the Giants' past, the last time that you can really think about that happening was with Tom Coughlin. It didn't happen under Pat Shurmur. It didn't happen under Ben McAdoo. But when it did happen with Tom Coughlin in his early days, when things like this were going on, what happened? Players ended up revolting, and you had to make changes to what you were doing as the head coach. And it wasn't until he made changes that it actually made a difference with the football team. Now, Joe Judge is coming in as an assistant under Bill Belichick getting his first head coaching job. How does that usually go? The answer is not too well. You look at the Belichick assistants over the years, and there has not been great success. In fact, there has been sparse success among all of them. I understand the mentality of wanting to take what you learned from the most successful coach in NFL history and what you learned from one of the most successful coaches in college football history in Nick Saban and apply that accordingly. It's difficult to do when you're a brand new head coach who isn't even 40 years old yet, and now you're going to try to be the tough guy out there. This is not, as I said earlier, remember the Titans. This is not high school football. What it is an NFL team that has not been very good for the last few years. Well, the last, 9 years. And a team that is trying to find its way back to respectability. I know you want to come out swinging. I know you want to come out and show that this is going to be a different time. But when you have players running laps, when you have coaches running laps with players, it just looks like you're trying way too hard. It looks a little thirsty. It looks, as Don was saying earlier, a little Tonka truck, whatever you want to call it, it looks like you are trying to be somebody else. This may be Joe Judge's personality, and that's fine. But if you're going to come out of the gate like this and come in hot, You better understand what your personnel is about. And for me, I think it's entirely too soon for him to have judged his personnel. He doesn't know all the different personalities that he has to work with. He doesn't know that yet. He doesn't know how players are going to react to this kind of thing. When you're a college coach and you get to the league, you see a major difference. You can't treat them like college players anymore. So while Judge is coming from the New England Patriots, and this might be something that Bill Belichick did, all he has to do is point to the rings. He didn't, if he did this his first time around with the Browns, first of all, it was the early to mid-90s, and secondly, that didn't go great in Cleveland. It didn't go poorly, but it didn't go great. So now, as you're trying to step in as a new head coach and you want to show who's going to be in charge right here, I'm the tough guy. I'm going to be the man. Okay, we get it. We get it. I am just hoping that this is not what every other Belichick disciple does. You know who really didn't do a lot of it in his first year? It was Brian Flores. He's been one of the few guys I would look to, and you know, people I talk to say he's just like every other head coach. He's going to be paranoid about things. He's going to be a micromanager about things. If this is what Joe Judge is going to be about, okay, but the results better be there, and I think we all understand the results for the Giants are not going to be there for a couple of years, and the last thing John Mara wants to do is keep going through coaches, and I don't think they're going to. What I want to know, though, is that he truly has the heartbeat of his players and of the locker room. And if you want to set this tone about being the tough guy and about being so different than things were before, you better know what you're doing, because that can go sideways on you in a hurry. In a hurry. Now, I want to flip to the Jets here as well. Let's get to them to start the show in addition, because I really have no idea who is going to be catching the football this season. You saw that Vincent Smith is out 5 to 8 weeks with surgery on a core muscle. Now, Vincent Smith, first of all, the fact that we're talking about Vincent Smith being out, being a blow, is problematic enough. Denzel Mims is hurt. You have Herndon back at tight end. We're all counting on Breshad Perriman to be this magical influx of talent into the wide receiving core when you don't have Robbie Anderson from last year. And Breshad Perriman, I've seen this cited a few different times about what he did late in the year. And, you know, that scares the hell out of me. Because so many times in baseball, especially in baseball, but in football, when things aren't as meaningful, while the Buccaneers were in it down the stretch, he put up some big numbers over the last five games, something like 25 catches, a couple of 100-yard games. And so I went back to look. Who were they playing? Who else was on the field? Well, who they were playing was the Indianapolis Colts, the Houston Texans, the Atlanta Falcons, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Detroit Lions. All five of those teams had pass defenses that were in the bottom half of the league and below, and a couple of them in the bottom four or five in the league. You also had Mike Evans and Chris Godwin out for the majority of the month of December. I think Godwin went down on December 15th. So the last few games, they didn't have other people to throw to. And James Winston threw for 5,000 yards last season. Yeah, he was throwing it to the other team as much as he was throwing it to his own team, but still, he threw for 5,000 yards. So when I look at those Perriman numbers, I don't all of a sudden think, wow, he's going to come in and be this difference maker for them right away. I wasn't expecting Mims to do that. And when you expect a guy like Perriman to come and do that, to be something that he hasn't been consistently enough in his career, I just think you're asking too much of a guy that probably got a version of garbage time numbers. Those weren't blowout games, but it was late in the year of a team that was 7-7 late, lost their last couple of games, finished 7-9. They were important games, yes, but you didn't have these other superstar wide receivers on the field, so they had to throw it somewhere. But fear not. There are a couple of solutions that could work. Number one, Le'Veon Bell has got to be a much bigger part of the passing game. Now, last year he caught 66 passes. That's not bad for a running back out of the backfield. But Le'Veon Bell, in his heyday in Pittsburgh, was getting targeted north of 100 times, throwing the football. North of 100 times per season. That has to be the case this year. He also has to be somebody that they line up in a lot of different spots to get him the football. And that's something that we talked about anyway, but he can line up as a slot receiver. You know, Jamison Crowder, you don't want to play him on the outside. There may be times where you don't have a choice, or he could be or Bell could be a second slot receiver in five wides. Le'Veon Bell has to be the guy that is going to make up some of those targets that other people are just not there to have. You look at the Jets' depth at wide receiver, and it's not there. And I'll give you one other one to look out for. Keep an eye on what's going on in Pittsburgh. Juju Smith-Schuster is on the last year of his contract, and the Steelers may not want to pay him. So maybe, just maybe, you might be able to make a deal there. I don't think you would have to do a first-round pick for him. Maybe you'd have to do a two. But that's something I would at least keep my ear to the ground on. Because he is somebody that, when he has a quarterback that can throw him the football, can be exceptionally productive. His numbers were down last year because of no Roethlisberger. But he's a guy that is a difference-making type wide receiver.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We'll get back to the phones here in just a few minutes. So I'm reading the New York Post late this afternoon, and I have to say, it is amazing to suggest that Jeff Wilpon may not want to sell to Steve Cohen because he hates Steve Cohen after what happened last time. I mean, so many people are buying into this. And if you're Jeff Wilpon and you're going to stick it to the Met fan one more time and not sell to Steve Cohen because you don't want to and you'd rather see it end up in the hands of A-Rod, I mean, that's just as ridiculous as it gets. Now, personally, I think this is just a ploy to get every last penny out of Steve Cohen that he can. And I understand that he doesn't like him. I understand that there may be other owners that don't like him and don't want him to have the team because they're afraid that he's going to go out and spend money. God forbid they spend money on players to try to win games. None of that should keep them from allowing him to own a team. And you can point to the SEC stuff if you want. I get it. He's Bobby Axelrod. Whatever. He can own a baseball team because this is a team in New York City. This is a team that should be contending and acting like a team in New York City. And it hasn't in quite some time. And that's ridiculous. Let's call it what it is. The Wilpons, and specifically Jeff, has driven this team into the ground. Into the ground. They have driven this organization into the ground. So now if you're going to try to go out and get the last every single penny that you can out of the deal, I understand it. But don't not sell to the right owner out of spite. Don't do that. Don't be that guy. I mean, for Pete's sake, at least acknowledge what's going on here. What's gone on is that you're losing $90 million a year. That number jumped way up from $50 million a year pretty damn quick. And that's the number that we saw last week. So if you're Jeff Wilpon and you're honestly going to hold up what you're doing in terms of selling your team based on spite, based on you don't like the guy, stop. Just stop. It's such an entitled case of wanting to have everything your particular way. You're the one who ran it into the ground, and now you're the one that's forced to sell it because of all the bad deals that you made. Because of having to constantly borrow against the building and against the network. The network, you're not getting rid of that because that prints money. Prints it. So now you are going to hold everyone else hostage so that it goes your way 100%. The deal fell apart because you wanted to run the team without having any skin in the game. Like he was ever really qualified to run a baseball team. When was he qualified to run a baseball team? How? He wasn't. He was never a baseball guy and always had his face in whatever was going on with the GM. Always. And I mean, just look at this team right now as a result. Look at what they are. They are a team that, because of injuries, their depth is gone, non-existent. And that depth was something that was built on weak depth, on injured depth. You're turning to a rotation now that has guys that have underperformed and are just guys now. Rick Porcello is decent, but when you leave that hanging pitch up to McCutcheon like you did yesterday, there's a reason that ERA ends up being around 5 at the end of the year. All of the pitches count. All of the innings count. You can break it down to a couple of bad pitches if you want. But when you go and you add that kind of guy, when you go and you add Michael Wacha, who's got the injury history, this is what you're asking for. And the GM is saying you have the deepest rotation in baseball without even acknowledging that everybody needs 7 or 8 or 9 pitchers through the course of a season. You can't say, well, we can't predict Syndergaard. Well, we can't predict Marcus Stroman. Why? Why can't you predict that you're going to lose guys? Why can't you operate under that assumption? When you have to consistently turn to Walker Lockett and that group of pitchers who are all the same guy that just keep changing uniforms and going back and forth to the alternate site, or as I'm now calling it, the upside down, you can't say you have depth. You can't say it. It's sickening that you don't want to sell because you don't like the guy. Because the deal fell apart last time. Because how dare he actually want to control the team while he is pouring money into it? The audacity! What garbage. What garbage, honestly. It can't happen soon enough. Spike in New Jersey. What's up, brother? How are you?
Hey, I got you back at 7. For at least, it's going to be choppy, right, with the playoffs?
Well, for this week. This week we got some we got the Islanders tomorrow night. We got some NBA playoffs, but I'll be here for the most part this week. I'm going to fill in with Peter next week, and then for good at 7 o'clock shortly thereafter.
All right. Well, that's it's always a blessing in a rainstorm. Okay. Yeah. Good to hear you. I want to talk about the Yankees real quickly. They're loaded. Just plug and play. They're loaded. The whole thing is to get into the postseason if they make it that far. I think they're trying to push through. You know, I'm a Rutgers guy. You're a Rutgers guy. Yeah, you see what's going on there. And I'll insist until it happens at the NFL. They may get started but I can't see them finishing. And I told this story on another program.
Big Ten thing later on because I'm thoroughly aggravated.
Say this properly: the perspiration, the expectorants, and the mucus being exchanged. It's just a formula for transmitting this disease. I watch the news sometimes. I try to, because, you know, you try to be well-rounded a little bit, take a little bit of everything, and this is the relief. And I see the kids with the backpacks going to school. They go one day, and then they're out. And half the parents don't want to send the kids. But, you know, we got our sports back. The basketball's been great. I can't tell. That first game was a showcase. My God, was that a good game.
It's been excellent.
We'll see what happens. But like I said, it's great to have you back. I'd like to get back into a normal routine. But this is the year. It's not going to be that way. We have guys like you that can keep a smile on our faces every time you're on. I thank you for that.
All right, let's not get nuts.
Well, all right. I got your check.
You know. Spike, you know, on the Big Ten thing, I'm going to spend a little time on that later on. Okay. And
so
I'm annoyed by that.
Right
now they're not playing, but the players are, and the parents are getting involved with trying to get it back on track.
Are they practicing?
And, no.
So they're just, are they allowed to work out?
I don't know exactly what's going on. Just from what I heard at Rutgers, I heard that players were going to get a rest coming up during this time, get a little break, and then come back and go back to work. But I don't think go back to work means full-on practice. I think go back to work means, you know, training and all that kind of stuff.
So, but the coaching staff continues to do what they have to do. I'm sure they're paid handsomely, so they keep planning and doing, and they wait. Maybe they'll start a little later. I don't know. It just seems bizarre to me, the whole thing. You know, I looked up until, I think, when the Cardinals played over the weekend. I just kept laughing because I'm always looking to laugh at this point. The Cardinals were 2-3 before they won the two games. 2-3.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody else had like 18-20 games, right? They were 2-3.
It's nuts.
It's crazy.
It's absolutely nuts.
Crazy. Well, listen, good to have you back, and always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Spike. Thanks for checking in, brother. I appreciate it. You know, I just, I'll get to the Big Ten stuff in a few minutes. Just from the ridiculousness of what we're seeing there. But let's hit David in Long Island. He's been patient. He's next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, David, what's up, buddy?
How you doing? It's my first time calling. I'm 20 years old, and I'm a young Jet fan. And you know what? I've seen a little bit of good, but I've seen a lot of bad. And I was thinking about...
What is your fondest Jet memory?
I've watched a lot of football, and I've been... disappointed a lot more than I've been happy with the Jets. And my fondest Jet memory, I believe, one of the happiest I've ever been a Jet fan is when we won it overtime against the Patriots. Eric Decker, the back of the end zone. I've never been so proud to be a Jet fan in my whole entire life. Like, I think that's one of the main ones. And another one was when Nick Folk won it for us against the Colts in the playoffs. And yep. I was a little young, but you were probably
9 then, I think.
Yeah.
That's why I asked. You haven't had a lot to work with here.
No, my pops has been a Jets fan. He was born in 1970. He's been a Jets fan forever, and he hasn't seen him win one. And I was kind of brought into it, you know? I was born into it, and you know what? I love this organization so much, and you know what? They're just – it's just I want to hit my head against the wall like every year, but I think we're finally taking a step in the right direction. Like, I know you didn't like the offense, like you're talking about the offense a little bit and the struggles, but I think we're going to be a lot better than what people think. We got Griffin and we got Herndon coming back, like full health. It looks like it says they're looking good in camp. I heard about Mims possibly getting hurt. Like, you don't really know what's going on.
It's kind of hamstring. What a shock for a wide receiver.
And we got this kid named Jeff Smith. Supposedly he's doing very well in camp. And we heard about Vincent Smith. He's a little injured. But I think between Crowder, the two tight ends, Bell maybe playing a little bit of wide receiver, and, you know, like Jameson Crowder, like I think we're going to be a lot better than what people say. But you never know. We don't know how Darnold's going to turn out this year. But I'm definitely excited. And thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, no problem. The kid you were talking about, Jeff Smith, is a guy that I saw today has actually been running with the starters a little bit. That's how thin they are. And look, maybe he turns into something, but until that's definitive, then you can't expect very much on what's going on right now. You really can't. I think more than anything, you have to have true playmakers, and you don't have that right now. You have to have true playmakers. And for the moment, you need some help in that department. I think the Jets, I truly believe there is the case to be made that they end up winning six games this season. If everything actually went right, and you've already, that was back when they had Jamal Adams, and that was when they had C.J. Mosley playing this year. You know, if even if it's five games, six games, you could actually believe that they were in a better position this year than they were a season ago at the end of the year. And they won seven games last season. But you could actually feel like they're really a better team this year, even though the results aren't going to be there. As crazy as that sounds. 800-919-3776. They can't play college football. I'll tell you why next. I want to get as much time with you as we can over the next hour. We've got Mavs and Clippers coming up here on ESPN Radio at 9 o'clock. So I want to spend a couple of minutes here on the Big Ten and what's going on with the idea of trying to play when you shouldn't be playing. If that's the case, when you're looking at all of the health issues, all of the what the doctors are saying, everything that is involved here, and you've made a decision to not play, and it is your single greatest revenue generator, it in football makes everything go. Everything go across all of college sports. And now you're deciding that you don't want to play because of the health. Doesn't it strike you that that's probably a pretty scary scenario? Doesn't it strike you that colleges and universities are willing to forego that revenue potentially altogether and certainly put it off until the spring in a best case scenario because all of the doctors, everybody involved from a medical standpoint is telling you it's a bad idea? Doesn't that tell you enough that it's a bad idea? Apparently not, because all of the players want to play, and that's not surprising. In any way is that not so, that's not surprising. You would expect players to want to play. You would expect guys like Justin Fields to want to put together all players across the conference to try to save the season. There are times that you have to save people from themselves, and this is one of those times. These are college athletes. And I know that everybody wants to look at this and say, they're not college athletes. They're there to play football. That's all they're there to do. They're not there to learn. They're not there to go to classes. They're not there to do this or that. Guys, I've spent time around these kids. If you had any concept of what their schedule is like, it is not what you think it is. They are going from 5 a.m. until midnight, virtually every day, between football, between whatever sport they're playing, it's not just football, and all of the academics and everything that's involved, study halls, classes, everything. They have to do all that stuff. It's not what you think. So these guys are there to play. It's what they love to do. I understand that. But if they're going to forego playing because of all of the medical recommendations that they are getting and all of the forecasts regarding the virus that they are getting, don't you think that they are trying to make the best decision possible? You can argue that they're making the decision because, well, they don't want to get sued. I'm sure that's part of it. What happens if you play, a kid gets sick, and has the myocarditis problem for the rest of his life? I mean, that's really where the major scare has come from out of COVID-19 for younger athletes. For the players or for the younger people who are going to have some sort of heart affliction they're going to have to deal with for the rest of their lives. So do you think that there's not going to be someone who's going to sue a university or sue a conference out of that? Of course there is. Of course there is. The players in this case, because they're in universities, they're not professionals. They're in universities. They should not be making the decision. They should not be making the decision. You can fight for it all you want. You're trained to be a competitor. That's fine. It's not up to you. It's up to the people that run college sports. You are not a professional athlete yet. The empowerment of the student athlete over the last 5 to 8 years has really been jumping off the charts. And I think you've really seen that this year. And listen, it's not a bad thing. You want to give kids more money in a stipend. You want to give kids more to work with in college so that they're not struggling and grabbing a you know, I've known kids that, you know, don't have a lot of money, so they're grabbing extra meal bars and things like that when they're leaving meetings. I've seen that before. So with all of that, you want to put them in a position to go play when this virus is easily transferred as it is, and somebody could come out of it with a heart condition for the rest of their life, or spread it to somebody, or spread it to somebody in their family, or spread it to friends, or spread it to anybody else, anyone that could be affected by it. You want to go play this year? No. It's different if it's the NFL. It just is. That's professional sports. As much as players want to be empowered and deserve to have some more power than they do, this is not the time. This is not the place. This is not the issue. And for the parents, oh dear God, you people have to stop. For the parents that are pushing for their kids to play, just stop. Don't you think that they have access to the best medical people that there is? That there are, I should say. Of course they do. But all of these parents that have backed up these kids and wanting to play are just not paying attention to what the important issues are. Your children are not professional athletes. And I got news for you. 95% of them, 98% of them, 99% of them are not going to be professional athletes. I'm sorry that they may not get to play 1 year. It sucks. Would you rather have that? Or would you rather have them get sick? Or would you rather have them dealing with a heart issue for the rest of their lives? What do you want? I mean, people want to knock the schools for not having the best interests of the student athlete at heart. And listen, there have been plenty of times that that's the case. And there's no doubt that these schools are in it for the money, even though there are 10 or 15 of them that actually make money across the country. Only 10 or 15 universities with their athletic departments make money when all is said and done. Of course they're in it for the finances. But you can argue whatever you want. If you're just thinking that they're trying to do it to avoid getting sued, okay, that's part of it. But in the midst of it, it is protecting your kid. Get a clue on this. The parents that want these kids to play, that are backing up this coalition, the student coalition, the empowerment of the student athlete is, in this case, not the right thing, in the least. They should not be making any decisions.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Mike, what's going on, bud?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I happen to be in disagreement with your position on, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 canceling.
Okay.
I feel like it. I don't know. Everything I've read, there doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of detail as to why, and maybe I missed it. You know, I understand, you know, the guess is, you know, the player safety obviously is mentioned, and, you know, they're probably financially, it might not make sense if they can't allow fans in. But I feel like, you know, I'm a father of a Division I athlete. My daughter plays lacrosse. So she's back at school now. They're on campus and stuff. I just feel like, you know, other conferences have figured out a way to at least try to move forward. I feel like there hasn't been enough of an effort to try to make it work. And I'll tell you what, like, instead of living in fear, just trying to move forward with life, even though you're right, there is uncertainty and how to figure it out. And I'm sure there's going to be positive cases, but we're also looking at college athletes, young people, the most fittest people in the world, probably, that, you know, when they get this virus, 99.6% is the survival rate of this virus. And I understand, and that's with factoring in people with underlying health conditions and old people that have died from it. So when you factor all of that in, and the idea that you know you could create opt-outs for players, you could make it, you could do your due diligence and at least try to make it happen and see if it, you know, see if you can get through a season. And you give players that have underlying conditions or they're concerned about, you know, the long-term effects.
Well, but ultimately ask me, Mike, why it happened when it did for those two conferences, it happened because of that myocarditis. I think that okay, the possibility of that long-term health condition probably scared the daylights out of these schools. And they're thinking about lawsuits. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But yeah, in this case, if you're trying to play and you're trying to make it happen every last second, I agree. We have to find ways to live our lives and be normal, okay? But I don't think that it was canceled because of the money that is not going to come in from, you know, whatever's in the gate. I think that was canceled truly because they were afraid of the long-term issues and the lawsuits that it would open themselves up to. And when that's the case, I don't blame them for doing it, because we can sit here and say this, but you know that if it happens, it's going to be an absolute nightmare across all of college athletics if it happens to one kid, or if the long-term issues, which we still don't know, we're still not clear on, if that happens, I think it's impossible to let an 18 to 21-year-old kid make that decision. I think when you're still technically an amateur, that's not a decision that's up to you. That's up to the people who run the sport.
The thing, and you know, those are some good points. I just feel like when you look at football in particular, there are long-range risks you're taking, right? Concussions comes to the top of the list. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like every year there's a handful of players that actually die, you know, in practice and, you know, sometimes throughout the season. So, you know, to me, I would favor something that, you know, was a well-thought-out, moving-forward approach that gave the player options and that, you know, allowed them to assess the risk, them and their families, just like they would normally. I mean, it's a dangerous, risky sport. And again, when we talk about this virus, you know, there's so much hysteria around it. But, you know, you are looking at really favorable stats that show, you know, the vast majority of people.
But it's also the thing to remember here, and thanks for the call, is it's not just the kids. It's the other people they're around. It's the families they're around. It's people that they could spread it to. The thing that just gets lost in all of this is how easily this virus spreads. It is incredibly, incredibly economical in the way that it spreads. That's the biggest knock on it. And if you're talking about football, it is the number one sport. It is the easiest way to have this spread among players. And if we don't know the long-term effects of it, erring on the side of caution is never the wrong thing. It's never the wrong thing. You want to play. Okay. There are other people that are not going to want to play. But when you're trying to do the right thing across the sport, I don't have a problem with what the Big Ten did in the least. Maybe they could play in the spring. Hopefully they can. I'd love to see it. But I don't think that right now, trying to get out there and force it like the SEC is, like the Big 12 is, I don't think that's the right thing to do. I don't. I think they are just forcing it because it's their way of life. And I'll tell you what, if it turns south on them, that is going to get ugly. Ugly. Anthony in Queens is next. Anthony, what's going on, bud?
How you doing, Chris? Thank you so much for sticking up for the student athletes. I really don't get it, and it hurts me so much. Because, you know, I'm personally dealing with some stuff over here, but I'm hearing these things. I'm like, no one is stepping up for these student athletes. It's very simple. It's too risky. You know, they call them kids all the time. That's one of my pet peeves. They're calling 18 to 22-year-olds kids. But then when it's time for something like this, oh, they're young adults. They need to make their decisions. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I commend you on this. You know, it shouldn't have even been on the table.
This is one of those cases, though. This is one of those cases.
Exactly.
You cannot allow, you have to protect them from themselves.
It should not have been on the table. It should not have been on the table for them to make that decision. You take it off the table, and they could take this year to study how the virus is still growing, how is it affecting people in society, how is it affecting student athletes, turning it to something where the student athletes can learn from it, you know? The focus is not even on continuing higher learning education, not even making sure the student athletes actually have classes virtually. They're not even worrying about that. They're worrying about tackling and football and can we have 8 games and 12 games. I'm like, shouldn't it be on college? Because last time I checked, college came before football. It was college before football. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think it is.
No, you it know, does.
I did have a couple of questions I wanted to ask you. I didn't want to take up your time. You know, one is the ACC and the SEC, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, why are they even trying to do this? I'm like, what is this? Why is, you know, but it's all about money, and it saddens me that no one is looking after these kids, except for, I did see a report. I don't know if you heard about that report where Cory Booker and a few senators found out about these pledges that were actually waivers, and they tried to block it.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, they were having, some of the schools were having the kids sign waivers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
the liability tried waivers. That. And I said, wait a minute. I said, why would you do that? And then I think apparently Cory Booker and some other senators were like, no, you can't be doing that. That makes no sense. Why are you doing that? You know, but
you can have them sign waivers. And ultimately, though, and you're right, Anthony. I mean, it was not the right thing to do. And thanks for the call. When you do that, you know, good chance the waiver isn't even going to hold up in court anyway. So that's why it's not even worth it. It's not even worth it to do it. It's just dumb. But when you're looking at all that kind of stuff, isn't that helping you make the decision? Shouldn't that make the decision in and of itself? Truthfully? Shouldn't that be able to, when you have to have a kid sign a waiver, doesn't that tell you something's wrong to start with? Maybe I shouldn't be trying to play this if I got to worry about kids signing waivers. Maybe it's just me. I'm going to throw that out there.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.